The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk
with Nissan. Together, let's play our part by staying apart. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
Well, as you heard earlier today, the government, the HSE, launched the new app, the COVID Tracker. And would you believe it, I was even able to download it. Very simple. You just go on your Safari or Google whatever COVID Tracker. It comes up then, you press various buttons and then you can press install and it comes up. And I see I'm not alone. 310,655 have checked in today and 99% of them apparently are feeling good. 1% have symptoms. Okay, and it gives a running total on the total number of confirmed cases and the total deaths, 1,741. The number hospitalised and required for ICU. And it gives graphs and all sorts of public national information. Well, Jess Kelly, our own tech correspondent and editor, said it was perfectly satisfactory. Now, you have to turn on the Bluetooth as well. Or to discuss this and other related issues at the health service, it's a pleasure to welcome back the CEO of the HSE itself, Paul Reid. Welcome back to the programme, Paul.
Good evening, Ivan, and thank you for downloading and hope you'll encourage.
No, absolutely. And it's very simple to do. Apparently, some people, mine is a fairly old phone, an iPhone 6S, and anything before that isn't capable of doing it, but I think they'll be able to do it. Why is this app so important?
Yeah, thanks, Ivan. And just to give you some updated figures, I know you said 300,000 in terms of check-ins. Right as of now, we've over 560,000 downloads and registrations. So people have actually registered, downloaded and registered. And then, as you say, we've close to 400,000 now have checked in with their symptoms. So that's really important for us. Just the context in which the app fits, the app is part of our overall testing and testing and tracing strategy, which you'll be familiar, I spoke to you before, the wide set of testing that we do across the country. And the app is an extra functionality and an extra enhancement to what we do in terms of testing and tracing. But we are really enthused by how the public today have embraced it so far. It was really important. To give you context on those numbers, Ivan, when Germany launched this on their first day, they had, at the end of the first day, they had 1 million downloads. Germany's a population of 83 million people. I'd be confident we'll get to the 1 million number soon. Which I think is a great
start. Might it give people a false sense of security? How does it actually protect someone who has it?
Yeah. Okay, so it's part of our wider public health, as I said, and the one caution I would say to people is, in terms of false sense of security, the best protections that everybody can keep taking, and I won't go through them all again, are our public health messages around social distancing, wearing facial covers when it's needed, and washing and cleanliness and all that. So that's the best public health protections. What this does do for us, however, is it helps us to track in much quicker time when a person has been identified as testing as positive for COVID, that we then have the capacity to immediately identify people who they will have been in contact with, in close contact, so again within 2 metres for 15 minutes. And the Bluetooth functionality facilitates identifying those people, and that we, from previously, sometimes it can take days to contact a person's contacts, this can be done now in hours. So it means we're finding a potential spread of the virus in much quicker time. But there's three key functionalities for the public of the app, which is, first of all, it's supporting us in the contact tracing and giving people notification they may have been in contact. Secondly, symptoms tracker, where people can check in if they're having certain symptoms and the app will advise them what to do next. And thirdly, as you said in your introduction, giving them some general information around COVID and the status of the disease.
But on the first one you said there, so I get an alert and saying you may have been in touch with someone. 35% of contacts of a confirmed case are now not turning up to be tested. What's that about?
Yeah, well, there's two aspects to this. First of all, we're one of the few, if not one of the only countries who are now testing contacts. So when we identify a contact, we set up an appointment and we expect them to come in for an appointment. So certainly, yes, we want to strongly...
Even if they're asymptomatic?
Oh, absolutely, if they're asymptomatic. I mean, the reality is, if you are a contact of a person who's tested positive, your potential test positive is in multiples of a general population. So it is, you have a stronger likelihood of potentially contacting the virus. So it is really important that people, if they're identified as contacts, do come forward themselves for testing. And then we can give the general correct advice. And it also helps to stop spread of the disease. So separate to the app, we will be strongly encouraging. But just on the app itself, so there's nearly a kind of an extra dimension to it in that regard, because it will give the person an alert on their phone. But certainly if that person has registered their phone number, our contact tracing teams will be able to contact them as well. And encourage, advise them and set up an appointment for their test.
I want to move on beyond COVID, but before I do, now that we're past the first phase of this, and if there may only be one phase, zero deaths the last few days, lockdown, end of it in sight, all aspects of the 20th of July and so on. Have you done any analysis? Because you see, what's going to happen to you is when your final budget comes in for 2020, someone will say, Paul Reid, why did you book City West? Why did you take over all the private hospitals? And you're going to say, well, it was acting on the best information of the modellers at the time, who said 85,000 people could die, 39,000, 29,000 people would die, and so on. Have you done any review of the accuracy of the modellers?
Well, what we have done is we've taken a very good reflection back of the actions that we're taking at various stages. And the one thing, as we're always saying since the start of this disease, it's a novel virus and we're learning about it all the time. And if you stand back from what we have looked at, we've looked at our approach, which was exactly the experiences we saw coming across Europe from Italy to Spain. Our hospital system, people who work in a hospital system, the public were quite scared by what they saw. So we had to build up capacity in a hospital system that we normally operate on a good day at 95%. Now, thankfully, from the hospital system perspective, the actions that the public took, the public health actions that we took, and also the actions that we took in the HSE of keeping people out of
hospital. So you're not interested, Paul, in finding out if the modellers got it badly wrong by a multiple of 20?
Oh, I have no doubt in 6 months' time, in 9 months' time, we will all have better data about the performance of this disease in different countries, how it performed. And we will be still learning in time to come.
And you've an open mind on all that?
I certainly, as CEO of the HSE, have an open mind on a whole range of issues, whether it's the data, the modelling, our response, what worked, what didn't work. That's exactly what we should have, and I have a very open mind on it.
So 90 people a day, on average, are still dying, even though they may not be dying of COVID. A lot of people still very concerned about delays on elective, delays and changes on screening. So when we last spoke, you said your number one priority was to get a roadmap for non-COVID care back to where we were on the 1st of February. How are you getting on with that?
Yeah, we, as you will have seen yesterday, I mean, just say a couple of comments on that. We are very nervous, and I want to be very clear with your listeners that it is a very nervous time in terms of delivering health services, because we have to protect the public, we have to protect the patients, and we have to protect our staff in the delivery of all the services that we deliver. And it's far too early from what we see to take any comfort that this disease is gone. So in a public health or in a health service terms, when we're bringing people back to hospitals, we have to take vast precautions that we wouldn't have taken in the past. So to be clear with your listeners, the services that we're now delivering are in what's called a COVID reality. And they won't be as efficient in a lot of ways that they would have been. They'd be less efficient as they may have been in the past because, for example, we have to protect that we don't have significant numbers of people in outpatients department waiting, or indeed in our emergency department waiting. We don't create a public health risk or a potential outbreak in one of our healthcare settings. So we have to take a lot of precautions, and this is not just in Ireland. You are seeing across Europe surgeries taking 3 times longer because our medics have to put on and put off their PPE in a very different way, cleaning of procedures prior to it and after it, procedures that the public will have to take in terms of coming in for elective care, infection protection and controls, cleaning processes, as I've just mentioned. So you have a whole set of protections we now have to put in place to protect the public in our health system. So in terms of the roadmap, yes, we've set out, and yesterday was the first of the phases of it, which related to the screening services, and we're really glad to be back on some of those.
But breast check is now down to every 3 years, is it, instead of 2?
Well, what we set out is based on, and this may improve over time, but based on the knowledge that we have right now and the controls and the procedures that I just mentioned that we have to put in place, yes, it won't be as efficient as it was in the past. And it was a very efficient service. But our clinics down there want to make sure that all the protections we put in have to protect the public against.
Okay, could you give someone a rule of thumb? Say they had either an outpatient appointment or an elective treatment in a hospital cancelled during the lockdown. When could they reasonably expect that to get rescheduled?
Yeah, well, we're currently finalising a phasing of all of the services, which goes probably in 3 phases up to September, between September and November, and November out to February, for various services and priority services. Certainly for urgent and elective care, just to remind your listeners, we never stopped urgent care, and that's still there, and people who feel they have symptoms and need urgent attention, our services continue. So we are mapping out those services over the coming weeks and months. The first one we just launched yesterday was related to screening services. But I do want to reassure your public, all of our teams and all of our community services and our hospital services want to bring back the public for their care and to do it in a very safe way. So I would urge the public to bear with us because we want to protect them as well as everybody else.
Well, when do you think you might be able to give guidance across a whole range of orthopaedics, cardiac? Like, I have questions here about disability services. Like, could you not have a big press conference, resumption plan?
Yeah, and we did. We set out, if you like what we did just a couple of weeks ago at a press conference, we set out what I'd call a framework that gives direction to the hospital services and gives direction to community services about a prioritisation of the services to bring back, about a clinical priorities that we want in the phasing that we want. And they in turn now, some of our hospitals and some of our community services have not been hit as badly as others. So in many hospitals, a lot of those services have been restored. And that's what we did at our press conference 2 weeks ago. What we will do very shortly, and we're working through with the new minister right now, is exactly the wider overall roadmap for a range of services. But again, I need to manage the public's expectations that it's a difficult phase in terms of delivering our services, but we want to get back to them all as quickly as we can.
So can you give any visibility on when you might be able to say to people, look, I had my hip operation deferred, I had my aftercare appointment deferred? I mean, like, can you, like, in other words, the lockdown and the period for the private hospitals took 3 months. Could you say, as a rule of thumb, just add 3 months to what you would normally have been expected? Would that be reasonable?
I think what would be reasonable is, as we see and get confidence about the performance of the disease in the coming weeks and months. And I'm not saying we're going to wait for that, but that will give the our staff, that will give the people who are delivering these services confidence about getting back to, you know, the levels that we were at before, which will take time. But it would be misleading to say to the public and given all times and dates right now, when we were still working through and we're still putting in some of the controls. So when people come into our hospital or our community or our primary care centres, that they have protections against the virus. I mean, you know, the reality of it is for ourselves looking forward, and this is based on WHO guidance, that you would constrain your hospital's acute services to about 80% capacity, and the social distancing that goes with that, and our primary care centres, you know, people who come in for therapies into our primary care centres. So it is a challenging one. I'd say to your public, bear with us. We will be releasing further details of the various services. But again, many, many places are back very significantly across a range of services.
Okay, final question where I started. How long does it take to get a test result now? If I get a test today, when will I get the result?
Well, just if I can give you the figures for the last 7 days, Ivan, we've tested 43,000 people in over the last 7 days. We have a capacity of 100,000 people. The turnaround times, which goes from the time you get a referral to the time you get your result and your contacts are contacted, is less than 2 days. That's the current performance for the last 7 days.
Okay.
Our target has been to have 90% of them done and completed in 3 days. But we're in...
All right,
really
that's certainly a big improvement, on where we're at. Okay, CEO of the HSE, thank you indeed as always for joining us. Paul Reid there explaining that announcements are still pending on the non-COVID hospital treatments and outpatients, but certainly the new app is something that if you can get it on your phone, people saying, look, I have a Samsung Android phone and I've been told it's not compatible. I think there's nothing you can do about that if it's not compatible, but if it is compatible, give it a try. It's free. Anything for free, I go for.